Bonjour and welcome everybody. I am Fanny Auger and I am delighted to welcome both new and loyal listeners to the L'Art de l'Attention podcast. Today marks a special episode as I switch to English for a captivating conversation with a remarkable guest. Our mission here is to explore the subtle yet crucial art of attention by interviewing diverse guests from various backgrounds and expertise, including a chef, a photographer, a philosopher, a baker, a concierge, a teacher. And today we are honored to welcome Satish Kumar, a prominent figure renowned for his profound insights and wisdom. I first met Satish 6 years ago during my first visit to Schumacher College for a one-week intensive course on deep ecology. At that time, I made a vow to return, and here I am in rainy Devon, ready to interview Satish and attend a too short course on radical love. As a brief background, Satish is the co-founder of Schumacher College, established over 30 years ago in 1991. It stands as a beautiful hub for adult learning and explores deep ecology, transformative economy, and spirituality. Satish has led an extraordinary life. He was a Jain monk from the age of 9 to 18, decided to re-enter society after reading a transformative book by Mahatma Gandhi, walked a peace pilgrimage for 2.5 years, and has spent 45 years in England at the forefront of radical change. His books have been published and translated into numerous languages. And in case you're wondering, yes, they are also available in French. I wanted to have you, Satish, on my podcast, not only for your teachings, writings, and life journey, but also because your actions embody the art of paying attention to oneself, to others, and to the world and nature. I'm thrilled that we will be discussing love, spirituality, nature, ecology on this episode of L'Art de l'Attention podcast. Join us on this enlightening journey as we explore the depth of this art of attention with Satish Kumar. Thank you for tuning in. And without further ado, let's begin. L'art de l'attention. Conversation avec Fanny Auger. I am visiting Schumacher College on this rainy winter weekend to attend a short course, or should I say a retreat, on radical love, inspired by your book with the subtitle From Separation to Connection with the Earth, Each Other and Ourselves. It serves as a perfect introduction for this episode of the podcast, The Art of Attention, because as we believe, everything begins with love. And more importantly, it starts with self-love. Dear Satish, thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I'm thrilled to be with you again. Could you please expound on the concept of self-love?
Yes, it is my pleasure to be your guest in your podcast. What is self-love? To love is to know. When you love someone, you need to know that person. Who am I? I'm more than my body. I'm more than my kind of physical existence. I am something deeper, greater, and broader. So knowing yourself, self-knowledge, is the first step towards self-love. Secondly, love is to accept as you are, who you are, what you are. Quite often, we compare ourselves with somebody else. We want to be like somebody else. Self-love is to be yourself. You are a special being. Each and every human being is unique. There's no second person like you. So, what a great opportunity for you to love yourself, this very unique self. And that unique self of you is sacred, is divine. It's microcosm of macrocosm. You are made of the sun, the moon, the cosmos, the planet. You are made of earth, air, fire, water. You are made of consciousness. You are made of imagination and creativity. Everything comes from you. Philosophy, language, art, culture, music, poetry, religion, everything comes from you. You are the source of all wisdom. You are the source of all knowledge. So understanding yourself, knowing yourself, accepting yourself is self-love.
Satish, I know you write extensively about learning from nature, and you use this beautiful metaphor that we are all seeds, but we can stay on the shelf, or alternatively, we have to be nourished by nature, the soil, the sun, the rain, the stars, in order to grow into an oak tree, for instance. As we delve into the discussion on this podcast about the art of attention, my next question for you, Satish, is how can we learn from nature?
So learning from nature is to pay attention to nature, to pay attention to the trees, to the birds, to the mountains, to the rivers, and see how everything is flowing. Everything is moving. Nothing is static. Air is moving. Water is moving. Fire is moving. Earth is moving. So that movement, that dynamism, is the nature of nature. And therefore, we need to learn to be dynamic, like nature is dynamic. The other thing we can learn from nature is cyclical. The economy of nature is cyclical, moves in cycle. We, in our industrial society, have built economic system which is linear. You take from nature, use it, and throw it away. Our oceans are full of plastic. Our land is full of landfills, which are full of rubbish. Our rivers are full of waste and pollution. That's a linear economy. When we learn from nature, we learn everything comes from nature, goes back to nature. Zero waste in nature, zero pollution in nature. Everything becomes clean and clear by moving. Therefore, nature is our teacher. Nature is our guru. Nature is our consciousness. Nature is our master. We have to learn from nature. And when we learn from nature, we are also recognizing that we are nature. We are made of the same elements as mountains and forests and animals are made. Everything is made of earth, air, fire, water, and consciousness. Sometimes we think that humans are separate from nature. That is a mistaken view. We are not separate from nature. We are nature. Every one of us is nature. So if we recognize that we are nature, we are not separate from nature, then we also learn that we are not above nature. We are not superior to nature. In our industrial mindset, we think that nature is only a resource for the economy. So we use nature to make profit, to make money. So when you learn from nature, you realize that nature is your teacher and nature is not just a means to an end, the end of economic growth. The integrity of nature is the end. And that is what I say, paying attention to nature, paying attention to the trees, the birds, the butterflies, the clouds, the rivers, the mountains, the forests, the oceans, everything where you pay attention, that is the greatest form of meditation.
And I love the fact that it makes you realize that you belong to something greater than yourself. A lot of people get lost in the ego or get lost on the way, on their quest, but they stop there. But just realizing we are part, we belong to this cycle of nature, of seasons, you know, gives us greater purpose. And I love the fact that we are recording this podcast in the library of Schumacher College. And behind me, it's almost the evening now. And we can hear the seagulls, the blackbirds. I don't know if you can hear it, dear listeners, but it's a very nice background to our conversation, Satish.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And you talk about ego. Ego means separation. I'm separate from you. I'm separate from nature. I am myself, separate. That is ego. What I'm talking about is that you learn from nature to shift from ego to eco. You change from G to C, from ego to eco, from separation to connection. We are all connected. We are all related. And we belong to everything. We are made of each other. Nature is therefore we are. This is a kind of internal connection. We are all connected. That's eco. Eco word comes from Greek language, which means home. Home is a place of relationship. Father, mother, son, daughter, husband, wife, friends, guests, everything is related. So eco means relationship. Ego means separation. So we have to move from ego to eco. And that can happen when you pay attention to your mind, mindfulness, heartfulness, and consciousness. Conscious living is a mindful living. And mindful living is living with attention.
And with love as well.
And with love. Love is to pay attention. To pay attention is to love. Mm. And to love is to pay attention.
Just to build on the concept of self-love, this morning you said, you talked about meditation and you said there are different forms of meditation. You can be cooking, you can be playing music, dancing. Just, you don't have to like sit, you know, with your eyes closed to be meditating. But you said something very powerful this morning about rituals. And on this podcast, we talk a lot about the power of rituals. So you say that when you wake up in the morning, I'll leave you say it because it's more beautiful.
No, you are right. So when you are paying attention and doing anything you do with mindfully, fully present in that moment, whatever you do, all your actions are transformed into meditation. So being in the here and now, in the present moment. So when you are cooking, you are 100% present there. It is not something that I must cook quickly so I can get on to something else. And then that something else you want to do quickly so you can move to something else. The moment you are always thinking of something else, then you are not in meditation. But meditation is to be fully 100% present in that moment, whatever you are doing. If you are doing gardening, fully present, paying attention to the soil, the seed, the flowers, the water, whatever is there, and you're doing it with love and without any kind of expectation from the future, but present moment, that is meditation. So meditation is to pay attention and be present in the moment, whatever you are doing, then whole life becomes meditation. Meditation is not just sitting in the morning for half an hour, close eyes, cross legs, then you are meditation, and rest of the time you are not meditation. That is not meditation. Meditation is a way of life.
And you become artists.
You become artists, yeah.
I love what you said.
Again, art. We think the art means dance, music, painting, all that. That is fine art. That is fine art, good art. But art of living, art of cooking, art of conversation, art of gardening, art of caring. Every person can do something with mindfulness and with heartfulness and with meditative mind. Everything can be transformed into work of art. So I said this morning, an artist is not a special kind of person, but every person is a special kind of artist. And the work of art is not a special kind of work, but every work is a special kind of art if you do it with meditative mind, with the presence of mind, and fully attention, and with deep love in your heart, and a deep gratitude in your heart. And that is a kind of ritual. What is ritual? Ritual is to do something as if it is a sacred activity. And so that sense of the sacred, sense of something beyond kind of just the appearance, beyond the appearance, that is art, that is meditation, and that is ritual. They're all connected.
And just before we move on to the love of others, which is one of the hardest way of loving, just would like to get back to the questions you suggested, and it was very insightful for our listeners now, the questions you may ask when you wake up in the morning. Instead maybe of just meditating with cross-legged, you say, you look at yourself in the mirror and you ask the question, who am I today? Who do I want to be today? What do I want to do? Who do I want to meet and connect with?
So that is a way of being mindful. So every morning we are aware of ourselves, and we are aware, who am I and how I'm going to live? What is the purpose of my life? What is the meaning of my life? And so you can do that through meditation. You can do that through some beautiful readings of great poetry or great spiritual books, or just sit quietly and just reflect on your life. Every morning we have to prepare. That's a kind of taking care of your soul, taking care of your spirit, taking care of your inner self. We are always looking at the external being, our external body and external society and external nature, but we don't look inside. Without inner transformation, outer transformation is not possible. So inner transformation and outer transformation go together, like walking on two legs, inner transformation and outer transformation. So every morning when you wake up, you start with the inner transformation, and that will reflect and help you to bring about outer transformation in society, in your work, in your home. Whatever you want to change, you will be able to change because from inside you are a changed person.
In your relationships as well with others.
Absolutely. Your relationship will be transformed. If your deep heart, deep soul, deep spirit, deep gratitude, deep love, that is inner transformation. So you start from that depth, and then external change can happen and will happen.
This morning, we raised the question, how can I stay sane and not take things personally? And we discussed it, and I think it's very interesting for our listeners now. What you answered is not to take things personally. I tend to repeat, you know, the four agreements, which is, may your word be impeccable and don't take anything personally. But you said something very interesting. You said that you could wait and meditate or come and have a cup of tea.
Yeah, that's right. So when you are able to wait, that's a very good quality. Sometimes we are impatient and we react immediately, or we answer immediately. And that sometimes can be very superficial, or could be aggressive, or could be hurtful. So I always advise people that when you want to speak, hold for a second or half a minute. Reflect what you are going to say, so that words coming from your mouth should be music to the ears of the listener. And so that ability to wait, ability to have patience and reflective response, and also the answer is not always in words. Sometimes you have to have answer in action. So if you want to convert somebody to your view, or you want to transform some relationship, and you want to improve your relationship, it cannot happen just by words always. Sometimes you have to bring a bouquet of flowers, or sometimes you have to invite them for a cup of tea, or sometimes you have to go for a little walk among the trees or along the river. When you have that kind of atmosphere, there's a kind of communication, it's a kind of transformation, the kind of participation that happens, and that's a very good way of communicate. We think that only words communicate, but sometimes words are inadequate. There are some other ways to communicate. And so if you want to have a real transformation, learn to communicate by many different ways.
For instance, listening.
Deep listening.
The art of deep listening.
Yeah, yeah. And when deep listening is to pay attention to every word the other person has said, and not only word, what that meaning of that word, why that person is saying what he or she is saying. When you look at the deep meaning, because words sometimes can be very superficial. So deep meaning, reflecting on that, deep listening is very important art.
It all comes back to the art of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deep listening. Yeah. And holding silences
yes.
as well.
Yeah, yeah. Which deep listening and deep silence, golden silence. Mm. Sometimes we think the words have the answer. No, sometimes golden silence has the answer.
It reminds me, and I confess it to you, one of the darkest times of my life when I've lost, like, my loved one, someone I barely knew was the most helpful person I met by that time. He just stood in front of me, holding my my arm and not talking for an hour, just deep listening. That was the most healing conversation. I was talking on my own, but that was the most healing conversation I had, the most healing moment I had after this grief. So the power of just holding the words.
Yeah.
And listening, being there, being silent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we have to really pay attention to the art of listening. That is, because we listening is a feminine principle. Speaking is a masculine principle. So in India, we say that you have two ears and one mouth. So listen twice. And so two part feminine, one part masculine. F2M. Two part feminine, one part masculine. F2M. So this is a kind of deep listening, because you have two ears, so twice you pay attention.
Twice as much.
Yeah,
as
twice
you,
as much.
As you talk.
Yeah, as you speak. And so it's a very feminine, it's a very sacred feminine principle of listening. Because in listening, you are receiving. Mm. And that receptivity, openness to receive something, you have to be open, open heart, open door, open window to receive something. So deep listening is to have a deep receptivity.
Mm. Before we move on to the love of each other, I just would like to underline something else very powerful that you said this morning about good work. Because, and I know because I asked my listeners this morning what question would they have for you. And a lot of them, they feel disconnected because they have to work, to have a job, to make a living. And they feel completely disconnected from themselves, from others, from nature, from the community. How can we connect more? And you mentioned this book from Schumacher, who gives the name to this college where we are now, called Good Work.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah. What Schumacher is saying, that there is a difference between work and a job. We need work. Work is good. We need to work to produce food, to feed ourselves, we need to work to build a house, to accommodate and shelter ourselves. We need to work to make clothes in order to keep ourselves warm or cool. We need to cook food. We need to work. And work is necessary. Work is good. Work is important. And work is sacred. So we should not shy away from work. Our industrial society and industrial culture in our modern world always say, work is bad. Labor, saving. We don't need to save labor. Labor is abundant. There's no limitation of labor. And we also say, save time. There's no need to save time. Time is abundant. Time is eternal. Time is limitless. So Schumacher is saying that we need to work and we need to spend time working. But job is something you don't do with love. You do it because only to earn money so that you can pay the bills. And that is different. So we need to transform our jobs into work, good work. And work, good work is to do something with love. So when you cook, you are cooking with love. Not cooking as a chef just to earn money so you can pay the bills. But you cook with love. A gardener, you can be a gardener as a job or gardener as a work. So transform your work into good work by putting love in it. And that way, you will be able to find contentment and satisfaction and joy and celebration in your work. You will feel, wow, I've done that. I've done the gardening. It was good. I've done the cooking. I've done the building of the house. I made furniture. I'm a maker. Mm. A good worker says, I'm a maker. I'm a creator. You need your imagination. You need your creativity to produce good work. But in a job, you just do what you're told. Your boss tells you, your community or your business or your corporation, whatever you are told, rules, regulations, bureaucracy, that's a job. So work, we are not simply consumers. We are makers. We are poets. We are artists. And so that understanding is Schumacher's book. Good work. It's worth reading.
And I just would like to add that when you join the Schumacher College, let's say for a semester or a master's degree, you have craft classes, I think, old craft. Yeah. You learn how to carve a spoon in the wood.
Yes, yes.
And you have many craft, which is completely, we have totally forgotten. I've been teaching at a school, very elitist school in France, which is fantastic. I mean, the teachings are fantastic, but there is nothing for the hand.
Yes, exactly. So at Schumacher College, we say we need education of head, education of heart, education of hands. And in order to bring education of heart, you create and cultivate love. In order to create education of hands, you carve. You become a craftswoman or craftsman. You go in the garden and do some gardening. You go in the kitchen, do some cooking, cleaning, washing up, making something with your hand. And that's very integral to Schumacher College courses. We say that in our timetable and in our curriculum, we design everything in such a way that your head and your heart and your hands are included. Education of head, education of heart, education of hands. This is a fundamental principle of Schumacher College curriculum.
Very insightful. I wish we could take some lessons from it for our system. Satish, I'd like to ask you now about loving each other, because I know it's one of the most difficult things to do. There are many conflicts now in the world we may not agree with, but they're here. And this morning you talked about diversity. Of course, I'll give some background to our listeners, because if they've never heard about you, they have to know that when you were quite a young age, first you were a monk, then you left after you've read a book from Mahatma Gandhi, and you went around the world at the age of
26
for 2 years and a half.
Yes, yes.
So it was that a pilgrimage.
It was pilgrimage. Pilgrimage for peace. And I was inspired by a great man from England called Bertrand Russell. He was 90 years old, and he went with his friends to the defense ministry in London and said, I want British government to ban the nuclear bomb. Until the government bans the nuclear bomb, I'm not going to move from here. I'll sit here day and night. So government did not accept that. And so they arrested him, put him in jail.
He was 90 years old?
He was 90 years old. So Lord Bertrand Russell, 90 years old, was a Nobel Prize winner, great philosopher. He wrote a book called Principia Mathematica. He was a great scholar and writer. He being put in jail for peace in the world. I read this news when I was 26. And I was with a friend. And I said to him, that here is a man of 90 going to jail for peace in the world. What are we doing, young men, sitting here in a coffee house drinking coffee? Let's do something for peace. So that was the inspiration. So with my friend and I, we started from New Delhi, walking without any money, because money is a symbol of fear. Because you think that nobody will feed you, nobody will look after you, so you have to have money, you have to buy food, you have to buy your room, you have to buy your shoes, everything. But wars begin in fear. Mm. Peace begins in trust. So if you want to work for peace, you have to trust. Mm. And therefore, how do you show that I trust you? I trust everybody. This is what your question about loving each other. Loving each other begins by trusting each other, mm-hmm. trusting one another. So I went without any money through 15 countries for 2.5 years, 13,000 kilometers. And I went not as an Indian, but I went as a human being. Not as a Hindu, but as a human being. Because if you go as an Indian, you meet a Pakistani or a Russian or a European or an American. If you go as a Hindu, you meet a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew or a Buddhist. But if you go as a human being, you meet human beings everywhere. So that is the relationship with one another. Trust the other. Do not fear. Fear is opposite of love. Love is letting go of fear. Love is letting go of ego. Love is letting go of separation. We are all interconnected. We are all interrelated. We trust each other. And even if I get cheated or hurt sometimes, I will accept that as a better than all the time living in fear, all the time living in mistrust. So I believe that loving each other and trusting one another is the root of peace in the world, root of justice in the world. And if we can trust each other, and love one another, then we can address the big issues of our time, such as climate change, biodiversity diminishing, pollution, waste, and many, many other problems, wars, conflicts, poverty. All these problems can be solved if we can learn to love one another and trust one another.
It's a beautiful and optimistic way to see things, because a few of the questions I've got this morning from the listeners were, I'm quite desperate by the state of the world, conflicts, climate change. Like, how can I keep the trust? And you just answered this question. Trust is the key. Love and trust
is the key, yeah. All our political policies, government policies, laws, regulations, they are all there, necessary, but without love, no policy, no government diktat, no other system can really be successful. You need external policy framework, but in that you need trust and love. So that is a key. People don't, although this has been a perennial wisdom, this has been with us from the time of the Buddha, the time of Jesus Christ, time of Mahatma Gandhi, time of Leo Tolstoy, time of Martin Luther King. We have always had these kind of examples and the teachers and prophets who have given us this mantra of love and trust. But we forget it. And we think the nuclear weapons can solve the problem, or army can solve the problem, or war can solve the problem. But we have seen that problems are not solved by wars and armies and weapons. Problems are solved by negotiation and trust and love for one another.
I wonder, how can we stand up for the thing that we believe in, was keeping this idea of love and trust in our hearts? And I know you're inspired by Gandhi, but I think it's a matter of choice and acting out of compassion. I would like to go back to your walk, like the peaceful pilgrimage, the pilgrimage for peace you did, because I think you met a couple of very important people, from Martin Luther King to the governments, and you delivered some tea because an old lady gave you 4 bags of tea, asking you to deliver it to like the people with the atomic bomb. Would you like to explain us?
Yes, it was a beautiful story. I was walking by the Black Sea in Georgia, and I was distributing a leaflet informing people why I'm walking and why I'm walking without money. So I gave this leaflet to 2 women standing in front of a tea factory. And they read the leaflet and said, "Have you really walked all the way from India without any money?" We said, "Yes, we have. We are here." So she said, "But then how do you eat?" We said, "People give us food." So she said, "Are you hungry now? It's lunchtime. I can offer you some food in my canteen in this tea factory. Would you like to have some tea and some food?" So I was very pleased. I said, "Yes, please. Anytime is tea time." And so we went in the tea factory. And as we were drinking tea and eating some bread and some jam and cheese, this woman went out of the room and came back with 4 packets of tea. And she said that, "I want you, this is not tea for you. I want you to give 1 packet of tea to our premier in the Kremlin, 2nd packet of tea to the president of France, 3rd packet of tea to the prime minister of England, and a 4th packet of tea to the president of the United States of America. These are the 4 nuclear capitals of the world."
By that time.
Yeah, at that time. And then she said, "I want you to be my ambassador and give them a message from me to them." And I said, "What is your message?" I was very intrigued. Amazing, this ordinary-looking woman working in a tea factory, she had this amazing idea. She said, "My message to them is that if you ever get a mad thought of pressing the nuclear button, please stop for a moment and have a fresh cup of tea. And that will make you think that your nuclear bombs will not only kill your enemy, but it will kill every man, woman, child, worker, forest, animals, lakes, everything will be destroyed. So stop for a moment and think and drink a cup of tea and don't press the button." That was such a wonderful message that I said, "Now I have a mission." And I carried that mission forward. And I went to the Kremlin and I delivered the packet of peace tea to the leaders of Soviet Union. And I went to the White House and delivered the packet of tea to the White House. And that was a wonderful thing to do. But of course, after delivering the packets of peace tea, I wrote to Martin Luther King. And I said that you are the embodiment of peace and love. And I want to come and see you and talk to you. And he said, "Yes, I have heard about your peace pilgrimage from India to America. And I would like to hear your stories. Please come and see me." So I went with my friend and both of us. And he received us for 1 hour. And he was, I would say, I have met many, many great people in my life. But he would stand above everybody. He was the most inspiring, most impressive man that I have ever met. He was such a radical person. he was imprisoned for 27 times in his life. And yet he had no malice, no revenge, no anger, no animosity to anyone. He said, white people are my friends. They are my brothers and sisters. I have no ill feeling for them. I am fighting against racism, not against white people. And if even if a black person was practicing racism, I'll fight with that racism. So it's not about black and white. It's about racism. So that kind of ideal and that kind of deep love and a deep gratitude and deep commitment to nonviolence, that was a so inspiring example for me.
We're getting at the bottom of radical love. Satish, how can we become activists? Whoever we are, whatever we do, how can we get in gear, you know, and start doing things in the right direction to contribute maybe at a very little level? Like you did this peace pilgrimage. You established the Schumacher College where we are sitting today back in 1991. I mean, I was very young by that time, but I don't remember we are talking about climate change. And yet you established this wonderful place. I mean, it's unique, it's one of a kind, where it's being studied and researched. Like, how can I make a difference at my very little level? How can I become an activist for peace, for love?
Yes, everyone can be an activist. It's not that somebody can be an activist and not somebody else. Everyone is potentially an activist. Now, what is the definition of an activist? Definition of activist is you do something for the others. You act to help other people. You act to help the planet. You are doing something not just for yourself. I mean, we all do something for ourselves. We do a work, we do a job for ourselves, to feed ourselves, to look after ourselves. That's all fine. But if you do something in the service of humanity, and everybody can do it. It's not something that you have to be a Gandhi or you have to be a Martin Luther King or you have to be a Mother Teresa. Everybody can do it. So just bring your consciousness, bring your attention, bring your awareness and say, I'm going to do something for somebody else. A poor person needs food. I will help. A person needs some health care. I will help. Somebody needs an eye operation. I'll help. The environment needs my service. So plant the trees. Wangari Maathai from Kenya, a woman, a professor, she planted 20 million trees. And she got Nobel Prize for planting trees. Wangari Maathai. That's an activism. And she was an ordinary woman. There's nothing special. She was just a professor. There are millions of professors around the world. But she said, I'm going to do planting trees other than just teach in my classroom. And he took her students to plant the trees every weekend, every Saturday and Sunday. Said, let's go and plant trees to stop this kind of Sahara encroaching and a kind of desertification increasing. So let's plant trees to stop increasing desertification and stop the climate change. So everybody is a potential activist.
Change. It's all about change. Like, how does change happen? And you say that it's from the bottom, like from the grassroots,
yes,
that we can all be change makers.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know, change does not start from Palais Elysée. Change does not start from the White House. Change does not start from the Kremlin. Change starts from the bottom up, on the fringe, like a great river, River Seine, flowing through Paris. Where did it start? Not in Paris. Started somewhere in the hills, somewhere in the forest, somewhere far away. A little trickle. And then that little trickle moves and other trickles, other tributaries join in, and eventually it becomes a great river. So in the same way, a small action somewhere on the fringe at a grassroots level, people begin and then other people join and other people join and then it can become a big movement. So all great movements, like great rivers, start small. So don't expect governments to lead the real change. Governments will change when they say, oh, people are changing and there are votes in it. And if I go for renewable energy, people will vote for me. If I go for peace, people will vote for me. And therefore, they start to change and bring change from the bottom, from the top down. So that comes later. First change starts from bottom up, from people's initiative. So I always say to people, start small. A seed is small seed, but that small seed has the potential to become a large banyan tree or an oak tree or an ash tree or an apple tree or a mango tree. So seed, each and every one of us are a seed of change.
You know, it reminds me of a quote, and I'm looking at it now, from Margaret Mead that says, you might know it, and I know our friend Elisabeth Laville uses it as well for her company called Utopie, and it says, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
Yes, absolutely. I had a great privilege of meeting Margaret Mead. I met her.
Wow.
Yes, yes. And she said this to me as well. She said that only the committed, dedicated activists at the grassroots level can bring about a change. That's the only possibility. There's no other way to bring about change.
And it reminds me of, you know, talking about politics and the people who govern us. There is this quote that I've read from Robert Kennedy back in 1968, and he said that we measure everything except that which is worthwhile. Yet the gross national product does not allow for the health of our children, the quality of their education, or the joy of their play. It does not include the beauty of our poetry, or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate, or the integrity of our public officials. It measures neither our wit nor courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile.
Yes, that's a very beautiful quote. And our whole world at the moment is obsessed with economic growth. And we are sacrificing for economic growth our environment, our human integrity. We are destroying our biodiversity, everything, because economic growth has become the end and everything has become the means. Nature has become a means to the end of economic growth. And humans have become a means to an economic growth. We say HR, human resources. Humans are the resource for economic growth. This is dreadful. Nature is not a resource for the economic growth. Humans are not a resource for the economic growth. Nature and humans are the end. Economic growth should be for humans and nature, not nature and humans for economic growth. So what Robert Kennedy is saying is so visionary and so powerful and so fundamental to pay attention. Only country in the world, a small country called Bhutan, is talking about gross national happiness, not gross national product. I think like a small seed, like a small trickle, that Bhutan might become the ideal country and the ideal example for the whole world to follow. And we should seek gross national happiness and not gross national product and gross national economic growth. That is not the end. The end should be human dignity and nature's integrity.
That's why you mentioned earlier that happiness is within us first.
Yeah.
And then we can redistribute it to the world.
Exactly. We can radiate happiness. We can radiate action. So be the change that you want to see in the world. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. Be the radiator of change. Be the radiator of love. Be the radiator of compassion. When a radiator radiates warmth, then people will come to the radiator to get warm because they are cold. So if you radiate love and you radiate compassion and integrity and love and generosity, then people will come to you and they will be influenced and you will be inspiring them. So be the change that you want to see in the world. Mm. Be the radiator.
And you'll be an attractor.
Exactly.
It attracts. What you give is what you get.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when we came to this room in the library of the Schumacher College in Devon, there was your book on the table, one of my favorites, called There's Another Trinity. I know you use a lot of trinities,
yes,
by the
yes,
way.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
We talked about hands.
Yeah, head-hearted hands.
Yes. And we talked about the power of separation to connection with the earth, each other, and ourselves.
Yeah.
And on the table, there is a soul society, a new trinity of our time.
Yeah. Yes. You know, lots of movements express their essence, their vision, their ideal in three words. In your French Revolution, you had égalité, liberté, fraternité. But that trinity of France, égalité, liberté, fraternité, is not complete because it does not address the question of our relationship with the natural world. It does not address our inner transformation, our relationship with the soul and the spirit and the spirituality. It only addresses the political dimension of égalité, liberté, and fraternité. So I wanted to bring a new trinity for our time, which is more holistic, which addresses our relationship with the natural world, our relationship with the inner world, and our relationship with the human world. And this is why I created this new trinity of soil, which is nature, soul, which is our spirit, and a society, which is a humanity, human community all around the world. So if we can bring this new trinity and have a harmonious and healthy relationship with the natural world without destroying and polluting and wasting, if we can have a harmonious and healthy relationship with ourselves, our inner soul and spirit, and a harmonious and healthy relationship with the human world, and accept the diversity of all cultures, it's wonderful that we have so many languages, so many religions, so many ways of doing things. It'd be boring if there was only one religion in the world, or one nationality in the world, or
one color
in the world, or one language in the world, or one kind of food in the world.
It is wonderful. That would be so boring.
It would be boring. And therefore, we need this diversity. And so if we can embrace diversity and not turn diversity into divisions and conflicts, then we can celebrate the diversity of the world.
I love this idea of celebrating diversity.
Celebrate.
That's what we need to hear more often, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Whereas our modern world is always pushing towards uniformity, monoculture, uniformity, same food everywhere, same kind of shopping malls, same kind of production, same kind of food, same kind of clothes, same kind of everything. So this uniformity, and they want all one language for everybody. Everybody should speak English, or everybody should speak something. And Hindus want whole world to be a Hindu. Muslims want whole world to be Muslim. Christians want whole world to be Christians. Americans want whole world to be capitalist. Chinese want whole world to be communist. That's a uniformity. It's wonderful to have communism, capitalism, socialism, Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, and all the other religions and languages and cultures. So I celebrate diversity. And the modern industrial society tries to push uniformity. And the uniformity is the cause of conflicts and wars. Mm. And diversity is the cause of peace, harmony, and trust.
I would have so many questions, Satish. I mean, I'm here for 2 days. I've been there before for 1 week, and I can never get enough of your teachings. We have so much to discuss. I just would like to, I'm just reminded now that one of your book that I really loved is called Elegant Simplicity.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's an answer to many of our problems. Could you elaborate on elegant simplicity?
Yes,
what is
it? Yes, elegant simplicity. It is in French, I think. Mm. Yes. So if we live simply, then there's enough for everybody. When some people have too much, others have too little. So elegant simplicity is to share. There's a plenty, there's enough in the world for everybody's need, not enough for anybody's greed. When you have no simplicity, then you are driven by greed. You will, whatever you have, you are not contented. Mm. Never satisfied. Mm. Never contented. Whatever you have is never enough. You want more and more and more. So elegant simplicity is to be contented with what you have and celebrate what you have. And then whatever you have should be beautiful. At the moment, we have so much ugliness in our society. Our industrial production is so ugly. There's no sense of beauty. So make everything beautiful and make everything useful. Beautiful and useful should go together. And then make everything to last, durable, mm. so that you don't throw away everything on the landfills or in the ocean. So the throwaway culture has to be stopped. So elegant simplicity says that make everything beautiful, useful, and durable. B-U-T, BUD principle of elegant simplicity. Beautiful, useful, durable. So, but we are making things too complicated. And Albert Einstein said, any fool can make things complicated. It requires a genius to make things simple. So we need to be genius and make things simple. Mm-hmm. At the moment, our industrial system, the offices, the kind of workplaces, too much bureaucracy, too much paperwork, too much lack of trust. And so elegant simplicity, again, needs love and trust. Mm-hmm. So I think elegant simplicity is the answer to many of our social problems, mm-hmm. social injustice, poverty. That can be addressed if we have elegant simplicity. Also, our climate change and environmental problems, we are producing too much. We are wasting too much. If our elegant simplicity will produce less, but produce something beautiful and durable and good. And so our environmental crisis can be addressed by elegant simplicity. So social crisis, environmental crisis, but also spiritual crisis. Because elegant simplicity means contentment, enough. Sufficiency. Enough is enough. I don't need more. Plenty. So that minimalism, that simplicity is a minimalism. Something few, less. Less is more. Mm. Not more is more, but less is more. Mm. So that's my book, Elegant Simplicity.
Mm. And I love this sense of noble humility. And you reminded us yesterday that humility comes from humus, the soil, the earth.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So humility, humanity, and humus, they all come from the same word, humus. And humus means soil. Because soil is very humble. Soil is always under your feet and never demands anything and always gives. So if we have a humility of the soil, we can be like soil. And also humanity, the soil beings, human beings are soil beings. Mm. So that's a very beautiful word, human and humble. Humility and humanity and humidity, they all come from the same root.
Satish, I would have many other questions, but I could only say that we'll see each other again and maybe next month in Paris. Yes. In the meantime, I truly advise our listeners, I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did, and I feel privileged to be welcomed by you here. Thank you so much for your time with us.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to speak with you. Thank you, and I wish you best with your podcast.
Thank you. So I advise you, dear listeners, to read Satish's books. Some of them, many of them, have been translated into French. And if you want to find out more about Schumacher College, you should definitely visit the website. You can come for 1 day, 2 days, short course like I am today.
One week,
one semester, or 1 year.
Yeah.
You can volunteer, you can come as a student, you can as well be part of this wonderful community. Satish, thank you again.
My pleasure.
J'espère que cette conversation vous a touché. Il est toujours difficile d'éditer et d'encapsuler en un temps raisonnable une conversation qui aurait pu durer des heures. Toutes les notes et les ressources bibliographiques sont disponibles sur mon site internet Si vous voulez découvrir les prochains épisodes ou poursuivre la conversation, m'écrire, je réponds toujours. N'hésitez pas à vous abonner au podcast qui est disponible sur toutes les plateformes ou à ma newsletter mensuelle. Merci pour votre présence et au plaisir de nos prochaines conversations.